Welcome to the Security Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Swiniger and Matthew Keener. Stop what you're doing and subscribe to our podcast and leave us an awesome five-star review and follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter.
We're here to talk more about cybersecurity. Today, we're going to be continuing our conversation about AI and machine learning, this time diving into how it can be actively used by attackers and defenders, as opposed to before where we were more talking kind of, you know, pre-made algorithms and tools.
And as usual, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers. And I assume that's true of Tyler as well.
Of course. His employer is an AI, so.
And since he's an AI, he doesn't really have opinion. He only has like data input.
Can you imagine that AIs are created and they just adopt the existing business structure with like manager AIs and CEO AIs? God, I'd be so disappointed. All right. I hope the singularity is single. Having a bunch of those could be a problem. Let's kind of start off with, where are the attackers using AI? Last time, like I said, we talked a lot about tools. We talked a lot about kind of, you know, different types of machine learning and supervised and unsupervised learning and all sorts of buzzwords. Where are the attackers using AI?
Well, I can give you certainly an example from security where it would be useful. So let's say that I have, if you're not familiar with reinforcement learning, let's say I have a reinforcement learning algorithm. And basically the whole point of it is instead of, you know, we talked about supervised and unsupervised last time, reinforcement learning is given some sort of reward signal when it does something good, right? A little piece of candy for doing something great. And it wants to maximize how much candy it gets, which allows it to be a mathematical expression. So you could give this AI model some sort of background information. You could give it a Metasploit, right? You could give it the ability to have specific things to try. And so the point of the reinforcement learning algorithm is then to try every single thing that it possibly can and kind of generalize its theory about the world to then go about optimizing some sort of method. So if it's solving a maze, it's going to find the fastest way to solve the maze. And if it's solving 1,000 mazes, it's going to generalize its knowledge to solve every maze as fast as it possibly can, because that's what it's rewarded to do, is minimize time spent in the maze, but also solve it. So if you give it Metasploit and you say that I'm going to give you rewards for breaking into a system and maybe capturing some flag, you can use AI to, you know, do capture the flag and give it rewards when it does such in the minimal amount of time. Or you could say, if our defender catches you, then you get negative 1,000 candies, right? So you can incentivize, you know, good behaviors, and you can also penalize bad behaviors or such. And so if you scale that up, you could spin it up into 1,000 different VMs with 1,000 different attackers and 1,000 different defenders, and sort of federate its learning to make a red team for some specific environment. And then you could deploy it.
That's interesting. How do you, you talked about doing the training. Are there people actually trying to train AIs to use Metasploit? And then I guess they'd have to run them against some kind of blue team somewhere to, you know, figure out which things were caught and which things were not caught.
Yes. Yeah, that's active work. And some of it is, you know, blue team, purple team, they want to, you know, create the defender side. So they have to create the attacker side. But there's definitely the attacker side, you know, pure doing that work. And there's actually publicly available tools for that as well. I saw something from Microsoft recently where there's a tool you could use that basically allows you to model that.
Is that more or less successful than a script kiddie with Metasploit?
Well, it's going to be more successful if you give it multiple tools. Like if you expand, you could easily say, you know, I started you off with Metasploit and allowed you to generalize how to use that tool. And so let me take some of the learning from that and let me add in more tools, more techniques, and more tactics, right? And so you basically expand its library. And so it's definitely more more capable, right? And then you also have this minimization function where you're trying to minimize the loss of candy. So it's going to, you know, reason about how to avoid detection better than just one individual human could.
So it could be the same thing as a script key, though, but instead of a script, they have an AI.
Yeah, I think in the future, this will be what gets deployed, is this, instead of just some person saying, reasoning about how they could get in. You just deploy this, and then they apply their skill on top of that.
Oh, man, imagine a botnet made up of AIs.
I'd prefer not to.
Holy cow, that could be devastating.
That could absolutely be devastating.
But at least AIs require a fair amount of resources. So you're not going to get a botnet of AIs necessarily, because you can't put an AI on a light bulb.
Well,
today,
really dumb one.
You
all it knows how to do is brute force. I mean, and now you basically let your everyday botnet.
Exactly. No, I don't think that you would be putting that on a light bulb anytime soon. But you could have some wider system that distributes specific instructions and then gets back some sort of metadata. So there's basically some cyborg ish medium, kind of like just a network that's in a distributed way telling those individual nodes what to do. To try different things. So it gives them all different sequences and has them split them up.
Actually, that's Daniel Suarez's Damon right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that book got a little magical for me towards the end, where he anticipated like everything, but it was really good. You linked a couple articles in here that have ways that attackers are not using AI themselves, but they're attacking AI. So the first one you called adversarial AI methods. We're back to adversaries again.
Yeah. So adversarial AI methods is actually a really funny topic, I think. I'm not the biggest fan of computer vision algorithms in the world. And that's not just upon their application, right? But it's the actual algorithm at its core, I think, is special. It's not my favorite. So the one that we use primarily, the convolutional neural network, it's done a bunch of stuff that's definitely propelled the industry forward, but it's not my favorite. So, a small caveat. So, adversarial AI methods. My first experience with it was someone basically has some picture of like a panda, and so you train a convolutional neural network on ImageNet, and it's able to classify images into a bunch of different, you know, categories. I forget the technical term, but basically, you know, panda or bird, like whatever, right? So there's a bunch of different categories. And so one of the things that was tested was much later on, after this has been broadly applied and used in a bunch of different places in the real world, was how could we trick this and hack it to not classify this as a panda. And so I probably don't have enough time to go into all of the ways that convolutional neural networks work, but effectively they find patterns like edges and curves and things like that inside of shapes. And they generalize about those shapes, say, this is what I'm seeing based on some label, right? So there's an image of a panda that has some modified pixel values. And so it looks like a panda if you look at it like a human, but the AI thinks it's a cat or whatever. And what was done was modifying those pixel values to create basically insignificant changes into the image in terms of our perception through our eyes. But the way that the AI perceives it, because it's looking for those specific edges and patterns, it now sees some where they don't exist or they do exist, but they're not perceptible to humans. So it's definitely a panda to us, but to the AI, it's a cat. And there's also some funny edge cases, right, that you can look up where, you know, a blueberry muffin gets confused with Chihuahua, right? There's some great images that's like, wow, I would not have thought about that. But AIs can't really detect the differences between those. This is a bit more sinister, though, because a hacker can basically, in the physical world, put an overlay on top of a you know, stop sign. And to us in the real world, it looks like a stop sign. Everything looks normal. But when the computer vision algorithm scans it, it sees a 45 mile per hour sign. And that can be incredibly dangerous. So
hold on. When you say put an overlay, do you mean put a digital overlay on? Or are you talking about like painting something that's only reflective to certain wavelengths or what?
You could do it either way. But it's just certainly easier to deploy in the physical world to actually do that overlay. The method I was talking about before was a digital overlay where they just trick the pixels. With a physical overlay, you could absolutely do a light reflection or something that's only captured by a camera or a specific type of camera. You could also just have this overlay that slightly changes the so if the red for a stop sign is one specific color, you could change the color values so that a camera would pick up on those distinct differences.
So it's just another tack really against an interpreter. So the AI is visually seeing the sign and it's interpreting it. You know, like you have software today where it's designed to interpret a font or a JPEG or an image or something like that and just misinterprets it.
Yeah,
because of a mistake in the coding, but I think the nuance here though is it's not a mistake that causes the misinterpretation. It's actually designed, the algorithm's designed to work as such. It's like the Microsoft's latest vulnerability. You know, was it a? It wasn't Exchange. What did they have where they said it was vulnerable by design? Oh, the print spooler.
Print spooler, yeah.
Right.
Print nightmare.
Vulnerable by design, right? So this is almost the same kind of thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's vulnerable by design, but also there is some algorithmic pieces that should be able to be picked up on here. If the computer vision algorithm was sufficiently trained or if the algorithm itself was changed into a more robust adversarial resistant model, then you wouldn't have these problems. An AI should hypothetically be able to reason that the panda is a panda. And it's maybe even that it's a panda who has had pixel values that have been manipulated because this doesn't actually show up in the real world.
So it's not that you would have, because I was kind of thinking a second ago when you were describing this, that you'd have to have a second AI that actually looked for the attacks in order to alert the computer vision AI not to fall for that. But I guess what you're saying is you should be able to build those into one system altogether versus having like a defensive system and the regular functioning system like we kind of think of today with networks and IDSs.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's you can build that into the core model. And you could also build, because these are all just probabilities at the end of the day. So you could build that into as an ensemble layer of the model, like given this thing that I've detected, what's the probability that it's being tricked? And you could then feed that into a higher level model that then says, okay, well, what's my actual outcome thing that I'm interpreting? Or you could develop a security detection basically that's saying, what's the probability that this particular thing is attacking, you know, my computer vision algorithm? It throws something over to an analyst. Analyst reviews it and says, oh, well, this is supposed to be this thing. And now this particular edge case is now thrown into the learning algorithm as a labeled example. So now in the future, if I see something like this, I know that this is actually a stop sign for sure. And so if that attacker uses that same technique again, then it could basically resolve that issue without thinking it's a 45 mile per hour sign. One of the problems there is that it may, you know, you would want to make it also generalizable. So if the attacker changes and now it's a 55 mile per hour sign, does the model still work? And seeing that as still a stop sign. So still want to make it generalizable, but you could do it two different ways.
I kind of want to dive into the Twitter thing here because it seems like this matches up with the adversarial model pit. So tell me if this is right or not, but this adversarial AI methods seems like it kind of matches up with the Twitter bot that was the Microsoft chat bot from a couple years ago that Twitter taught to be racist and profane?
Well, somewhat different. So the Twitter bots that are using language models and they're taking in input from the real world are taking in an unsanitized input essentially to be able to produce their output. So they're consistently learning from the real world. That way they can be poisoned. So it's, I guess, similar because you are attacking it, but the Twitter case is more of a model poisoning method where you're actually you're changing the core data set to produce an output that you wouldn't want necessarily to have happen. Whereas with the adversarial method, you're not actually changing the core data set that was used. You are taking advantage of a flaw in the algorithm or the processing steps of the data.
Yeah, and by understanding the different possible attacks, then you're kind of feeding that back into like a reinforcement model in order to avoid future like attacks.
Yes. Yeah. So the way that the Tesla models work, I'm sure they use a bunch of different models as an ensemble, but reinforcement learning, I'm sure, is a key part of how they function. And you can reward when it's able to detect those sorts of scenarios. And you can also, because this is a really clear, you know, case of attack that you can define, you can provide a pretty broad range, you know, so you detect these potential edge cases, maybe from an accident that took place in the actual crime scene, or maybe from just wild examples that you've seen or generated in your own space. And then you could use reinforcement learning to help it generalize. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think the Twitter bot was more kind of like we were talking about yesterday a bit with the supervised learning versus unsupervised learning.
That's the unsupervised. Yeah, you can't let those AIs run around unsupervised.
Well, it's I think the Twitter bot was, and maybe I need to read up more on how they function, but I think it was what I would consider in the classical sense is supervised learning, because it requires its core data set to produce, but it may have been an attempt at self-supervised learning where it tries to reason about the world from inputs and doesn't necessarily have labels that we specifically give to it.
Like racist?
Well, it's all a matter of its input and the general balance of that class within its input. So if you've been on the internet and in specific areas, you'll see, you know, commonalities with behavior. And so if it's deployed in that space and that's where it's getting its data from, it's going to reproduce that just because it's reasoning about the data that it sees, not with specific labels that tell it this is, you know, to be a specific way, but rather just inferring from what it's seen.
Right, because it was poisoned because Twitter is poisonous.
Yeah, I was just thinking what a bot would look like Parler or Reddit or 4chan or 8chan.
Whew. Oof. Let's not.
Oh, well, imagine if you took that, you know, whatever it became, and then had an algorithm to turn it into a visualization.
That sounds awful.
Well... Yeah, you could actually potentially use that. So OpenAI made their GPT-3 model, which basically scanned the whole open internet, a lot of it, open internet, to do a self-supervised model to essentially understand language and how it gets used. And you could do that to different aspects of space to understand in more depth some sort of topic model. So if you are a social media company or somebody who is trying to stop disinformation, right, on a platform, or abuse, or there's a lot of different areas that impact the end user in terms of their trust in the platform, right? And so or safety on a platform. So you could actually train on some of these specific areas a language model that says, hey, their language operates in this particular way with these particular patterns. And you could compare that to other areas to build a weak classifier to say, okay, this is toxic content or this is not, or this is unsafe. And you could also identify anomalies with like growth of some of those patterns. So there are certainly use cases for it. But I would probably not spin them up on the internet and say, hey, have people come talk to this thing.
So you mentioned as well in the notes here, you left a link for generative models for malware and phishing. So is this polymorphic malware or is this something more advanced?
Well, it's polymorphic, basically. You know, we were talking before about, you know, red team, blue team AIs, right? So you have a red team AI that's attacking and blue team AI that's defending. That's essentially what generative adversarial networks do, GANs do. And so they create a bunch of things that try to trick a classifier. So, you know, that case with the panda, they try to create a bunch of things that trick it into thinking that it is something that's, you know, a panda, but it's not, right? So the generative adversarial networks are actually really broadly applicable to other things, but you could do the same thing with malware. So if you've got specific behaviors that you want to elicit and you want it to evade detection, then you could create a GAN that basically says, I have to have this given output, which is malware that behaves in a specific way. You are allowed to modify the text in any way possible to evade detection. And I'm going to have a defender on the other end. Same thing with phishing. I have to have a user click on a particular link that goes somewhere, right, and take action. But the way that you go about doing it is up to you. And so that one's a little bit harder to model a defense side with actual true positives, because you'd have to deploy it in a network where people actually click and behave like humans. But you could use a generative adversarial network for both.
Well, you talked about generating phishing with that. So I assume that kind of is considering the possibility of AI actually kind of, I wouldn't say is necessarily attacking AI, because you've got AI that's doing phishing response and monitoring, trying to identify phishes and spam and et cetera. Is this a scenario where you've generated an AI designed to try to fool another AI who's trying to identify phishing or whatever within the context of email?
Yeah. And I'm sure that there are instances where this has been done. But the downside to it is you have a short time horizon within which you could do it, depending on the provider of defense. So let's say that your detection mechanism to try and catch the adversary, which is the generator, is O365's or Iron Port or what have you, right? And so you're basically saying, if I can go in under the radar and it won't detect me, then I could do a bunch of different testing to see, you know, in the real world, what do people click and not click, and try to reason, you know, do A/B testing to reason about what's the most efficient, you know, thing to deploy. But the thing is, as soon as it's deployed in the real world and it gets caught, you have some real timeline between when you deploy it to when it, you know, the model can fix it, either because there's some sort of new intelligence or because now your examples have been added into the model, which is updated. And so now everybody's, you know, immune to this. So it you can generate new things and you have some time to execute with those tactics.
Now, if you knew the algorithm that the defensive AI or the detection AI is using, was that going to lengthen your window, or is that not really something that's going to be relevant in improving the attack?
So it absolutely can. You could also try to define maybe how long my time horizon would be after detection, depending if you knew what algorithm they were using. That would absolutely impact your ability to get further or stay persistent or evasive for longer.
Now, what other, I guess phishing is the obvious one. Are there other generative types of attacks where this makes sense to use an AI in an attack scenario? Because I'm kind of trying to think that, you know, AI would really be valuable in an attack scenario where you're talking about volume versus specifics, or is there a case for using AI for very specific types of attacks or eluding a specific type of defense?
The efficacy, you could research a lot of different spaces where it could potentially be useful. But the efficacy really depends on what's the quality of the data that you've got. And most likely, this is not going to be generalizable. This is going to be specific to a specific environment that you've already infiltrated if you're a red team. So if you're already inside and you want to reason about how I could get data out, you could potentially, right, build some sort of model that gives us some understanding of how to, evade all the existing detections. But you'd have to deter so many different things to be able to get to that point. And I think that's not necessarily a useful use of your time and resources if you're already in there. So the two that I talked about with malware and phishing, I think are key just because of the availability of information and the feasibility of deploying something like that.
Okay, what about the ability to use AI in order to improve data exfil?
Well, you could use a risk. Well, some of this comes back to what type of detection. Like you talked earlier about, you know, if I know what type of algorithm they're using. Well, if they're using unsupervised learning and potentially some sort of density-based model, or if you're using the type of detection I talked about before where, you know, given some time span, 1 hour, what's the largest outlier, you kind of know what rate to go at, low and slow. If you have perfect information, you also know, you know, maybe how they do their risk-based models, or you get an understanding of the density of traffic across the different networks. So you could basically reason how to go below the radar or determine, it's all about going below the radar and avoiding detection. I think you could also identify potential areas that aren't monitored by utilizing some behavioral analytics. And I think a lot of that comes back to kind of turning the unsupervised learning detection models on their head. The second thing you could do is you could actively poison a model. So if you have some, when I say density-based model, I mean it's looking at some graph of information and looking at dense regions and non-dense regions, and it's likely saying that a new region with low density is something worth alerting on or high risk because it's an outlier. And so you could poison a density-based model by throwing a bunch of noise into that space. So say you compromise two or three accounts and you want data exfiltration to be possible, you could make those two or three accounts start to exfil some amount of data that's completely benign. And then also, you know, go under the radar that way by poisoning that general region of space.
Oh, that's a really good idea. So it's kind of like using the same principles for detection for the exfil, really, then.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's almost like the boy who cried wolf. Like, you just cry wolf a bunch of times with benign data, and then people start ignoring it.
Somewhat, but it's more that the algorithm starts ignoring it. Like, I actually ran this. So I have an algorithm that detects this particular thing, poisoning of a density-based algorithm. And it's called Wu-Tang. And the whole process is it looks for an anomalous move in some particular direction that creates a new dense region that was not there before. And so the reason I started creating it was because I started testing, you know, how could I poison a model and how easy is it? Well, in a just basic square detection methodology that's common in multiple different vendors I've seen look at this way, I was able to reduce alerting efficacy by 40% by poisoning 2% of the nodes in an environment. And that was with an alerting methodology that was like really high noise. So they wasn't even tuned. It wasn't even trying to reduce false positives. It was just the bare bones, what exists, you know, before you modify it for your environment. And it was able to reduce the number of alerts by 40%. And the adversaries, of course, with perfect knowledge, could get in under the radar 100% of the time because they know exactly where to go. And you could expand the amount of like the speed at which you could exfiltrate data by a factor of like 10x because you have that knowledge.
That's a really good return on investment.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But we got to detect it too. So,
all right. So what do you see an AI attacker looking like in, you know, 5, 10, 15 years? Are they going to be able to start running fully autonomous attacks?
Well, I'll actually take this from the social media disinformation space. So, and also one of the things you mentioned earlier about botnets. I think, so right now, the open source available red team tools that do this work are great starting points to pivot from. I think a reinforcement learning algorithm in a federated space, like we kind of talked about, would be incredibly useful. But like I said, I take from disinformation campaigns. What happens right now when a campaign is started up is there's some sort of attack vector. Some politician says something and it could be potentially divisive. And so what then happens is a bunch of smaller different content disseminators are deployed into some sort of region to make some big fight about this, to start engaging users and hacking the network effects of social media companies, which are their design is to optimize, to then pull people into different directions. Well, the way that they do that is one individual person is able to command this large array of space, and they use automation to speed up how that happens. So if an attacker is able to, utilize one of these AI tools that's, you know, trained on maybe different types of defenders, and they're able to, at scale, deploy a botnet to utilize these functions, and they're all communicating back via some sort of federated learning. It's too much to stop at one time, coming from many, many, many different directions, and they're all learning simultaneously. Each individual node passes back information that it takes in. They're all just like swarming the beach. That's how I see it. So there's some smart attacker, cyborg network, basically human AI combined, utilizing these tools at a really broad botnet scale.
So is it going to make sense in a scenario like that to try to counter whatever they're doing or to find some method for attacking the AI directly?
So I think there's a piece of it that's going to have to be done on the infrastructure side of the broad internet to assist. But I think there's multiple spaces that have to improve in order to prevent those types of attacks. And also, you know, as the red team tools get developed, so do the blue team tools. So I don't think, you know, in 10 years when that's happening, obviously we're not going to have the same level that we do today. And there's also a lot of work that's being done on the blue team side. Once again, like you have knowledge, imperfect as a human, but perfect, you know, from a technology standpoint, of your own environment. And so you can model about what is acceptable and unacceptable. And these types of attacks are going to be, and I think in a lot of ways, incredibly obvious. And so I think that the tactics will change from a blue team perspective to leveraging our internal data more and more. And I think that's just the natural, healthy progression of this space. Although that does sound really scary right now, right?
All right. Yeah, what about it? Oh, go ahead.
Because just imagine a scenario where it's kind of like the Tesla thing where, you know, it's not obvious to the AI that it's an attack because of this, that, and the other. But if a human were to look at it and they'd say, oh, obviously that's an attack. That's going to be something, a scenario that might lend some challenges, because the whole idea of moving towards using AI for defense is to get kind of humans out of the loop on things where they expect the AI to take over. So there may be gaps or periods where there are gaps where, you know, we've turned over something to an AI or whatever, and then the adversaries find a way to blind that AI, and now we can't trust that AI at all, so we got to bring humans back in. And depending on how long it takes to make the adjustments to these AIs as these battles are taking place, we could be, have periods of time where we're back to the old days of not really having a good solution or do defense at all.
Oh, I mean, I think that's a categorical risk. I mean, when you see what's happened this year with all of these supply chain attacks and this ransomware, but I also don't think that it's a closed loop system. I think we continue to improve on both ends. And just because I'm able to posit about what will happen in the future, I think, you know, the defenses can advance in the same way, not necessarily the same way, but to be resilient to even those types of attacks and continue to automate. So as those attacks start to stand up, you know, defenses start to stand up against it. But once again, there's a clear upper hand that the blue team has that the red team does not. And so as long as that's used as leverage, I don't fear having to go live in a non-technology life anytime soon, personally. But certainly it's a risk.
Well, I think that's something to be talking to future vendors about, Ben, because if you run into a scenario where, you know, their AI gets blinded for whatever reason because an attacker has figured out something or whatever, what's their turnaround time going to be on being able to adjust their algorithm, or is their algorithm already self-healing in order to be able to recover from that kind of thing? Because if you have to put in a support ticket and wait 2 weeks for them to come out with a patch to update their AI or something like that, that's going to be like a real non-starter, because it seems to me that everything is going to get faster the farther we go on in this kind of environment.
Yeah, I think the self-healing part of it is definitely something that will, you know, be impactful to reduce those SLAs or reduce the time to respond to those sorts of incidents. Like I said, I automation improves on both ends when there's an adversary and a defender. But I think it's worthwhile to make sure that the vendors are able to respond to the active types of attacks that are happening, as well as what could happen in the future. And there's not a ton of people that do data science and AI and security, but it is massively growing. So I think that there are more people asking those questions today by maybe a factor of 10 than were a couple of years ago. So it's definitely it's definitely something that we have to keep an eye out when you're interviewing a vendor for whether or not you're going to use their product or how they see the future roadmap of their product.
You can't just believe them when they tell you that it's got machine learning.
Oh, no, my bad. If they say that they're using AI, I mean, buy it. Buy it right then and there.
And pay them twice what they ask. It's worth it.
Yeah, just hand them the checkbook and say, you know, just fill in that top line.
Yeah, do you have some sort of regression model that could tell me how much your product should cost? And then just go ahead and sign my check.
So we were talking about, you know, what, you know, the kind of attacks we see from the adversaries. What kind of new uses do you think defenders are gonna come up with for AI, you know, in the time frame, without it necessarily being a response to what attackers do? Kind of anything out front or forward leaning on that?
I think the most obvious thing is automating existing processes more. So if we have some sort of model, kind of talking about the fact that we have leverage because we know our environment, we can add additional safeguards at an infrastructure level that the AI defender can put in place that have less of an impact to operations, but more of an impact to reducing risk, so that they can they are allowed to be more autonomous with how they defend, and that human intervention is still sought out, but you have a lot more automation in place because it becomes overwhelming. The second thing on that is we have kind of just started. I mean, in the grand scheme, doing the data science work on security data as a field. And when I say just started, I mean, I know people have been doing it for a while, but it's still new and it feels like it's not quite mature. And that's why you've got all these, companies and machine learning and security is often looked at as a snake oil because that's how it's portrayed. I think a lot of that comes down to, companies looking to monetize too early on their particular products, whether they're a good idea or not. And I think that will go away, especially since now everybody kind of has that opinion. That's kind of the life cycle of the product. So things are going to get vetted more heavily. And the AI defenders will make use of the data scientists that stick to the work and defining how we can create better detections, how they can be more explainable, more generalizable, et cetera. Because currently, it's like I said, it's kind of like a base layer. There's a lot to be grown on top of it. We're seeing phenomenal efficacies and efficiency gains out of artificial intelligence use in many fields. I think security is just burgeoning in that space. There's too much data and not enough people doing the work.
All right. Well, I think that's a good note to end on. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening to the Security Serengeti podcast. Follow us on Twitter @SerengetiSec. And download and listen to us on your favorite podcast app.